Hi there. Welcome to The Preventable, the podcast giving you a seat at the table with conversations about the intersection of alcohol, drugs, and mental health in everyday lives. Take a seat and join us.
Welcome to The Preventable. I have with me today two illustrious guests. I feel like I say that every time. I need like a different adjective or something, but these are, you're two of my newer friends, right?
Yes. Yes.
So with me today are Kenna Jo and Ryan, and they work at Prevent Ed in a department that is new for us. And it's new, but it's rapidly growing, and that's our peer support program. And both Kenna Jo and Ryan, you work in Franklin County, which is a rural community kind of southwest of St. Louis, correct?
Yes.
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. So we've had Jordan. First of all, welcome, by the way.
And Thank you. Good to be here.
Yes, glad to be here. Okay. We had Jordan Hampton on, and he was talking a little bit, broad strokes, about what it means to be a certified peer specialist, or a peer, just for shorthand. But he talked a little bit about the difference between a counselor and a peer, and that there's like a credentialing process. But I'd like to sort of go to the very beginning. Like, let's say that someone is struggling with substance use disorder and they reach out for assistance, and whoever they reach out to is like, you know what, I think you would benefit from talking to a peer. Your phone rings. What happens from that point?
Okay. All right, well, it varies from person to person, of course. But, you know, you see how they're doing and where they're at with things. You never know who's calling. Sometimes it might be, you know, my first call was a dad that was concerned about his daughter.
This was the first call, like, when you first started with
us? When I first started.
Okay, yep. All right.
Yeah.
So and now you're talking to a dad. Okay.
Yeah, I was talking to a dad first, and because he didn't know what to do. You know, his daughter was struggling. He wanted her to get help, but, you know, so I said, yes, I'd be happy to talk to your daughter.
Mm-hmm.
So they put me through with the daughter, and you know, I the beauty of being a peer is I've been there, you know. That's the big thing, is I have lived experience I can share. And so I talked about where she was at in life, and she was struggling with drugs, mm-hmm. you know. And so I just, I was able to relate with her on common bond, and I was able to help convince her to go to treatment, you know. So the dad was super happy, and, you know, she went to treatment. But other times, you know, it might be somebody that's just struggling, and I can, you know, they'll call and I'll meet them for coffee, mm-hmm. you know, and I'll sit and just talk and be someone they can talk to or listen to, you know. And it, you know, we also have MAT,
which is
medical assisted treatment, and that's something new we're doing with ARCA,
mm-hmm.
and
which is a local treatment provider that provides MAT.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're not, like, writing a script for it?
No.
But what would that look like?
Okay. Yeah, that just looks like we call ARCA. Well, actually, I talked to Tricia. She calls ARCA, emails them. And then we set up a time to do a virtual meeting with the doctor. So we have I'll meet with them and sit there, and we'll meet with the doctor virtually.
Mm-hmm.
And then they will write them a prescription for usually Suboxone, any other mental health medicine too.
Mm-hmm.
And then,
like, to stabilize, like a mood stabilizer or something like that.
Sometimes, like
anti-anxiety.
Yeah.
It helps to get, like, through the withdrawal process, because they are definitely still going to experience that. So,
yeah.
So, like, when you're, so I want to backtrack, and Kenna Jo, I think you have shared experiences when you get that call, right? When your phone rings. And it could be a parent, it could be the person themselves who's struggling, it could be, you know, a significant other. And sometimes it could be like a caseworker or a DJO or something like that, right?
Yes.
Okay. So the phone rings and they say, I need your help. Are you, it for that person you described who needs treatment, and you're able to provide them a warm handoff, are you accompanying them even to that, like, intake office? I mean, that can be very scary. Or are you sitting next to them in that telehealth visit? Does it go that far, or does it really depend?
I have gone, like, further, you know.
Okay.
Last week I had a girl, a pregnant girl, mm-hmm. struggling with opioid use. Her probation officer had reached out to me and let me know she had warrant because I previously knew her. And then, ironically, they wound up reaching out to me that same weekend saying, hey, she needs help. Well, so I got her into treatment. That was on a whim. I'm like, I'm picking you up Monday. We're going to go show up and see if we can do this walk-in.
Was she willing? Did it take some convincing?
She was willing, but it also took a little convincing because it's scary. She'd never been before.
Right.
And then also nobody really knew what she was going through because she was so isolated. And so we got her down there, and I stayed in contact with her caseworker. We worked out a plan for when she got out. I worked on getting outpatient set up for her locally and connecting with doctors and stuff to keep with her MAT treatment as well. And then so when she was out, I picked her up from there and I got her to her safe place because she didn't have anybody. She doesn't have family that she can count on. Like, she's really alone in this world. Wow. So I got her to her safe place. And then so following that, she had a court date coming up because she had a capious warrant out for her arrest for probation revocation. So with her taking my suggestions and putting in this work and sticking with it and trusting me, because she was really hesitant the whole process.
Like, of course.
Are you sure this is going to work? Is this going to help me? I picked her up last week, Wednesday, and drove her to Branson for court.
What?
To just walk in front of this judge.
Holy cow.
And before she had a chance to be arrested, to present what she's been doing and also help her and speak on her behalf on what she's been doing.
Well, so you're like a character reference, basically.
Yeah. And by the time, so we were the last people that the judge seen, and he looked over everything. He heard what we had to say, and he looked at her, and he was like, well, I can tell you're not going to jail today. You know, and so what was really cool about that was it turned out he's also the drug court judge in that area. So he, like, came down because nobody else was in the courtroom. Uh-huh. He sat down with her, and he got real personal and intimate with her. So that was a really cool experience to see on the other side of that. And not only did that happen, but she was also able to get discharged from probation. So she doesn't even have to worry about that anymore. And the blessing is, okay, what is she going to do from there?
Right.
You know, because all the consequences are gone now.
Oh, sure, sure.
And she's still showing up for her thing. She's still showing up for IOP. She's still showing up for me, like, engaging in conversation. And that trust is built that she calls me, like, daily.
Wow.
You know, so it's just, it's that. It's DFS caseworkers who reach
out
to
us. So it's really individualized to whatever. Mm-hmm. Do you say client? Or are you saying?
So, I usually say peer.
Yeah.
I usually say peer, but depending on who we're speaking with, because some people don't understand the language necessarily. Right. But we have seen, the blessing is, like, so statistically, it'll show you that peer support decreases hospitalization, decreases incarceration. And we have actually done that. We have helped people out of jail and find them treatment instead.
The outcomes that you all have made since really, what, January of 2021 are, like, nuts.
Yeah, and we live in such a rural area. And most
is
of
that
those,
right, January 2021?
Yes.
Or time? Okay,
yep,
yes.
That's right.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah.
So our rural area is so big. Most of these people don't have transportation, and we don't have public transportation.
Right. Right.
You know, so
it's not even an option.
No.
Right. Right.
No.
The dream of, like, a recovery taxi is, like, so huge for down there. But so we have to go
sponsors,
to a lot of
sponsors, if you're
these
listening,
people.
Recovery taxi.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Let's think about how we could make that happen.
That would be amazing.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So we do. We go to these people's houses and we meet them there. Or if they're living homeless, we meet them at the park. Or, you know.
Okay.
Yeah,
so
we've
gone
out searching for them before when we hear they're living behind, you know, a building in a tent. We'll
as
go
your
look for them.
Technically as your boss. Okay. I've got to. I'm like going like, okay. So how, by the way, you're doing a great job. But people might be sitting here thinking, how do they set boundaries? How do they keep their own safety top of mind if you are out searching for someone that maybe is unhoused, or you're getting calls with somebody who's really in crisis? I mean, how do you protect your physical boundaries, your mental boundaries, and then also, like, your own recovery boundaries? Like, how,
yeah,
I mean, I'm a codependent, so.
That's a tricky one. The boundaries
that would
get,
be real tricky for me.
Yeah, that's a tricky one. The boundaries get blurred sometimes. You know, that's something I had trouble with in the beginning, is like, because you become friends with these
of
people.
Of course.
You know, and it's.
If you're doing it right.
Yeah, and then, so it's like, how far do I let this go? And I don't know. And the situation is like when we went look for somebody, we went together. You know?
Yeah, right. Okay.
There's, you know, and I follow my gut usually the most part. I mean, if I feel like something's going to be a dangerous situation, I just don't go. I don't second guess my gut. But,
and you're checking in with Kenna Joe as your support system, but also your supervisor and your.
Yeah, absolutely.
But
yeah,
do you
Trisha's
ever have a moment where you're like, this is getting a little too close to home. Like, I need to put my oxygen mask on first and make sure that I'm doing what I need to do.
So I know that we've had people call in, and I'm pretty known in our area, and I've had a lot of relationships, whether in my active addiction or through high school or in recovery. And there are certain people who, like, reach out, or even couples.
Mm.
Yeah.
And so when they reach out, I'm like, okay, so I will be honest with my supervisor and say this might be too close to home for me.
Understood.
Because I have a past with this person, and it's not a risk I'm willing to take for my recovery.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'll engage in the first conversation, but if we could do a warm handoff to Ryan.
Yeah, yeah.
Or if we get couples, I fear that if one person were to work with both people in that couple, neither one of them would feel like they have a safe place.
Correct. It'd be a little, like, triangulating.
Yeah, so mm-hmm. we also separate that, because that's also unnecessary drama that we wouldn't want.
Yeah, right. You don't need to get swept up in that drama.
Yeah, a little tricky back and forth at table.
Right.
You know, but then also we maintain, like, we still go to our recovery meetings. We mm-hmm. still talk to our sponsors. We still live our home life, our recovery life. It's not like, so we don't go digging deep down in the woods looking for homeless people. But
no, just around town.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if somebody's like, hey, this is where they're at. And a few of them are people we were previously working with that we lost that connection with.
Oh, okay.
So we already know who they are and kind of what they're about. So it's not as like, it's not like we're going just looking for some random
shit. Yeah. Right. You're not like knocking on windows saying, hey, you need help.
Yeah. And it wasn't but a few years ago that I was that guy, you know? So.
Did you have, so, okay. I have so many questions. Okay, so number one, do you ever bring folks to your meetings, or is that
I do
off limits?
So we kind of have to in our area because we're limited.
You're limited, right?
Yeah, that's
okay,
very
but
true.
So and I was talking to someone about that too. So our boundaries are like, okay, if a person needs a meeting and they have like never been to a meeting, or they're scared of going to their first meeting, or they don't have transportation to get to that meeting, we'll work that out. But when we go to that meeting's not about us; it's about them. But as far
as, so then
like,
you might need to go to another meeting where it's all about you.
Absolutely.
Or maybe you're sharing.
Definitely.
Yeah, right.
Definitely.
Absolutely. And then, you know, as far as like events go, because a lot of people become friends, but if one of our peers are having a get together, that's not something I'm going to go to.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
You know, and I.
Even though you might want to sometimes.
Absolutely. And so the pregnant girl I was speaking about, I actually used to sponsor her at one point, and we used to be friends, but now we have this boundary where she doesn't know where I live. She can't come to my house as before she could do that, you know, so we have different limitations and different boundaries that we have to do to protect our role.
Wow. Okay, so Ryan, you mentioned that a few years ago that was you.
Yeah.
Did either of you have peer support when you all were going through like the depths of everything?
I personally did not. I didn't know what a peer support was until I went to treatment. Yeah, I went to treatment 2 years ago, and that's where I met my first peer specialist. And if it wasn't for him, treatment would have not have had the same effect. I mean,
for you, it really was a game changer.
It really was. I just connected with him in every class, because we do like 8-10 hours worth of classes each day, and he would teach two of them. And it just, everything he said, just, I mean, it just sunk in, and it just really made me feel like there is hope.
Yeah.
And that's a big part of our job, is just experience, or sharing our experience, strength, and hope. You know,
strength, and hope.
Yeah.
That's right.
And he's the one that mentioned to me, he's like, when you get out, get you some clean time and become a peer specialist. And I'm like, okay, I think I will. And that's what I did. I ran with it. I got out and I started, you know, that became my goal. And, you know, here I am.
And
you
look
know.
At you now.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, it's pretty
did
awesome.
Did you, kind of, Joe, have?
So, no, and I actually did not know what a peer support specialist was until I had learned about this job coming up.
Uh-huh.
A previous probation officer of mine had reached out to me one day and was like, hey.
Because you had been... I mean, you had been in recovery for some time. Mm-hmm. You had been kind of working somewhere else. And so you were approached by someone to say you should consider this?
Yeah. My previous drug court probation officer had reached out to me and was like, would you be interested in this job? Because it's basically what we do in recovery already.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
If we're really, truly working a program, we're being of service to newcomers or people who were struggling anyways.
Mm-hmm.
And to be honest, I like looked at my husband. I'm like, why me? Mm. And I started crying. And he's like, why not you?
Why not?
Because it's just, you know, even as recovering addicts, we still struggle with our worth sometimes and knowing that we can do something different. So I'm going from this factory of 6 years to like this whole real humanized world and environment, you know? So it was like very dramatically different, terrifying.
Okay. So in terms of coming from what you describe as a factory to more of a human services organization, more kind of human interaction, I know we've spoken, kind of Joe, about the things that your previous employer did that really helped support your sobriety, right?
Absolutely.
And I know that that's also something that y'all are doing in Franklin County, is really trying to, because let's be real, just like there's not a ton of transportation options, there's a limited amount of employment options.
Yes.
So we want to make sure that employers do what they can to keep their employees, especially those who might be struggling with a mental health or substance use disorder. So what were some of the things that your previous employer did that really stood out to you that made a difference in your sobriety? And we could go to, on the flip side, of things that you've heard or seen or experienced where it has not helped contribute to somebody's sobriety.
So I previously worked at Buddy's, and, you know, in a plastic factory. And so originally they had gone through a human resources change, because originally the HR lady they had before was like, no, we're not going to give you a shot, considering what my background and history was.
Oh.
And, you know, and I was like, just let me prove myself, you know. And
like they actually said that to you. Like,
yeah, she told me she really did not want to. She wasn't there much longer after I had gotten hired on.
Weird.
But so karma. During my time, I was actually in drug court, treatment court in Franklin County. And I had to leave at a certain time to make one-on-ones or do UAs at random times.
UA is a
urinalysis,
yes,
testing. And I would have one-on-ones, or we would have court set at the same time daily. Or even some of my visitations with my kids through DFS, things like that. They would work around that schedule for me and encourage me and not hold it against me that I would have to leave, not point me out, not, you know,
yeah,
they'd let me come back and make
like,
up the hours.
Oh, well, Kenna Joe has to, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. They have gone as far as showing up for people at their graduations, you know.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, they, during like our clean time anniversaries or our recovery anniversaries, they remember those things and they come up and they say, hey, good job. Like, I'm proud of you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that really made a difference. Like, it became family, you know. And
I know it broke your heart to tell them goodbye.
Yeah.
But I also know it probably was one of their highlights. You know, they were probably sad to see you go, but also so grateful to see you go.
Yeah, they had even asked, like, Trisha and I went back and kind of discussed what peer support services were and what options are, because they're conforming from, okay, instead of just letting people go if they are having drug issues, how can we get them help?
Yeah.
You know, because we don't want to lose these people.
Right, exactly.
So,
especially now in this job market. I mean, if you find a good employee, you want to keep them.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean that, you know, you have no boundaries. We just talked about the importance of boundaries, but we also don't necessarily need a zero tolerance situation where we're just cutting people left and right because they make a quote unquote mistake.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
Huh. So here's the deal. I want to keep the conversation going. So if you like this conversation, if you want to hear more with Kenna Joe and Ryan, maybe even the next episode, please consider rating, reviewing, subscribing to The Preventable, and join us back here because we're going to have another conversation with Ryan and Kenna Joe. Thank you so much for part one.
Well, thank you.
Thanks.
We're looking forward to part two.
Thanks for joining us at The Preventable, brought to you ad-free by PreventEd. PreventEd works to reduce or prevent the harms of alcohol and other drug use through education, intervention, and advocacy. Please visit their website at PreventEd.org. Like what you heard? Rate, review, and subscribe to stay up to date with what we are serving on The Preventable.